Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Friday edition of the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Headed into a cloudy, cold weekend. Nice for a fireplace, maybe a bowl of soup and a book. Andrea Haines is here. Do you have a bowl of soup or a book?
What do
you have
for me? I do. I'm ready for a cold weekend.
Yeah, you have a heat issue. That's nice.
Hopefully solved soon.
Andrea is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Tribune. I want to jump right into it because there are a lot of great stories to talk about. But you brought a guest in, too, so why don't you introduce your guest a little
bit? I did. Eli Pankin has been our intern in the fall from Northwestern, and today's his last day, so he is here enjoying our company for a few minutes.
Eli, what's the most memorable thing you've learned under Andrea?
There's too many things to count, honestly. It's just been a great experience, and I'm glad to be here.
Wow, he's good. Nice job.
He's a tech aficionado now.
Okay, let's talk about this raise, because, you know, we've talked about this company a lot on the show. It has a great idea. You get a gift card. You don't really want to go spend it at the Home Depot or whatever, so you sell it. Other people can buy it and make a little cash on it. Now they're in trouble, and it seems like this could be a dooming sort of situation. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens here. Raise is a gift card marketplace. You can save money by buying gift cards there. But sometimes customers run into trouble because they'll buy a gift card and then it won't have any value on it, which is obviously a problem. Raise will refund your money in that kind of situation in most cases, but it does create a problem for consumers, you know, if they wind up having to battle over cards they get that don't have value on them.
Right, because the idea is that I'm putting the card up for sale that I got from my Aunt Harriet, and you're buying it, but that's not really the case, right? I mean, was that out of Florida that they were buying $1.9 million in cards, or what? Explain.
Yeah, we found a couple of cases where there were, you know, alleged theft rings that were basically laundering money through card for cash kind of locations. And then there are places along the way that will use Raise after that and other online marketplaces to turn that money into cash. So it happens where people will basically, they'll be shoplifting rings. They might steal merchandise. They return the merchandise, and because they don't have a receipt, they get a store credit, and then the store credit is basically sold as a gift card, which isn't maybe how you and I would think of what a gift card is.
So what's next for Raise?
So they're working on it. I mean, they have told us in detail about what they're doing to fight fraud on the site. You know, they obviously don't want this happening to customers. But now the Illinois Attorney General's office is investigating because of this kind of pattern of complaints from consumers.
Well, we'll see where that goes, because it was one of those things that seemed like, and, you know, and they will point out, look, we're trying to crack down on this, but they say it's a small minority of the cards that they sell, too. We should say that.
They do.
Okay. So I want to move from that to another do-gooder. 0% is this startup, this company that would take unused, uneaten food from restaurants, right, and then get it to nonprofits.
Exactly.
The problem with that is, how do you make some cash to at least even pay for yourself?
Yeah, they are a for-profit company, or they want to be a for-profit company. So they're not a non-for-profit, but they are doing kind of a business with a mission. They're trying to take food that's being wasted and get it to people who need it. And they've found, you know, willing restaurants that are very willing to participate. They found willing, you know, places that feed the hungry that are willing to take the food. But the problem for them has always been getting the food from point A to point B is still expensive.
So they started by charging the restaurants, right?
Yeah, they've tried different models, and they're just finding that restaurants, while they're willing to do it, they won't or can't afford to pay to have the cost that it would take for them to transport the food and make a profit still. So, you know, this is a new way. They've got a new thing called Snack Pass, where they're hoping to get consumers to pay, where they're, again, supporting a good cause, but they're getting an opportunity to, like, use an app and get snacks. You know, it's kind of an incentive. It's a way for the restaurants.
It sounds like middle school, kind of.
It kind of does.
No, but so you spend $10 a month, right, and you get 5 snacks from participating restaurants.
Yep. So you can go and, you know, show your thing, and you've kind of prepaid for snack items that they're featuring during the month.
You know what kind of snacks they are?
You know, there's a couple that we mentioned here. I can't remember offhand what they are.
Well, it doesn't matter. I didn't mean to throw you a curve.
No, that's okay. That's okay. One I know is like dumplings from Wow Bao. One is like a blood orange chia pudding from Farmer's Fridge. And I'm sure there's tons of other options.
Right. Hopefully some tastier ones.
Yeah.
No, I love the dumplings. And so the idea is people will pay for these snacks, and the money then, the people, and to the, I just ripped on that restaurant. I shouldn't have, because they're giving all that money back to 0%. right? They're not charging for the snacks.
Right.
And then 0%'s got that money, 10 bucks a month from me or you, that they can help pay for transportation for this food and to get it to nonprofits.
So, exactly.
So do that for Christmas. Give someone a snack pass. What a great way to help people.
Yeah, it seems like a good cause. Hopefully they find a financial model that works.
We don't have a lot of time yet, but one of the other things you wrote about is Donald Trump and immigration policy and the fact that the tech world is kind of worried about his immigration rhetoric. Why is that?
Yeah, so the tech world has always been somewhat against Donald Trump as a whole, although there are a few notable exceptions. But one of the things that they're concerned about is this anti-immigrant idea. And, you know, maybe when you think about immigrant jobs, the first thing that comes to mind isn't necessarily skilled tech workers, but that's what the tech industry is worried about. And that includes some Chicago CEOs, including Context Media, who we talk about on the show often. And, they're worried about what sort of this tech talent brain drain. The University of Chicago weighs in. They've got tons of students, talent that they want to keep here, and people are getting worried about people like that being able to stay in the country.
Well, and my first thought was, well, he's talking about illegals, but he's not really, right? They did talk about limiting some of the work visas and also having some programs where Americans would get the job first, which is a great idea, unless the smarter people are the ones who aren't the Americans, and that's what they're worried about.
Yeah, and it's, you know, STEM training is part of that, like we need to have enough homegrown computer science people before maybe we have the debate over keeping all those jobs.
That's Andrea Haynes. She's the editor of Blue Sky and the Tribune. You can read these stories and more at chicagotribune.com/bluesky. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Ian, best of luck to you. Appreciate it. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You know, the federal government announced the unemployment rate for November. It was 4.6%, the lowest, I think, in 9 years. So we'll talk to Mark Hamrick from Bankrate a little bit later about those numbers. But this is the time of year when a lot of people are getting part-time jobs and seasonal work, right, whether it's with UPS or at the Gap or wherever. When it comes to the jobless number, one of the things you talk about are the part-time workers who want to get full-time jobs. Well, this might be a good chance for people to snag that. Tom Gimbel, the man behind the LaSalle Network, is in the studio, as he is on most Fridays. Tom, welcome.
Good to see you, Steve.
All right, so we're going to talk today about how a temporary job can become permanent.
Yeah. I think that the expression of losing sight of the forest through the trees really applies, is that we're so caught up in what we think our dream job is, air quotes around that, that we don't take the short-term opportunities. And you need to get, how do you know that you like something if you haven't done it? Right. It's kind of like with our kids.
Right.
How do you know you don't like spinach? You've never actually tried it.
Well, spinach is a bad example, right. But I see what you're saying.
So, you know, to go out and take a temporary job, whether it's in a call center or like you said, at the Home Depot or Starbucks for seasonal work, you may actually enjoy it. You may like the flexibility of it.
I was reading some of your suggestions, and what strikes me is it's probably good advice for any time, anywhere. What you're really saying is know what you're be educated, teach yourself about what you're walking into.
Absolutely. And if you don't have anything, something's better, right? So most of us are working for money. I mean,
sure,
we need
right.
to pay bills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the number one thing, is having income is better than not having income. The second thing is doing something you've never done gives you experience. And at the very least, if you do it for 5 or 6 weeks through the holidays and you hate it, you'll know.
But the other side of it is if you go in there and you say, well, look, it's my job to put A into B, that's what I'm going to do, you're going to really not get the experience out of it unless you say, well, I'm not putting A into B. What can I learn about this company, or how can I do other things?
I'll tell you, I had a young guy working for me. This was probably about 10 or 12 years ago, and it was a full-time job, and so not direct correlation. But I said, you know what, you really are working hard at this, even though you said you didn't want to. He goes, if I got to come to work every day, I might as well give it everything I have.
That's great advice.
And I thought it made a lot of sense, and it's the exact same thing you're talking about, is if you're going to go in, learn as much. If you're going to go be a barista through the holidays, learn about it.
Right.
Really learn about it and enjoy it and understand why Howard Schultz wants them to steam the milk every single time, right? It makes you better at your job.
Okay, one of the other things you suggest is to take advantage of your presence to get to know the management team.
Yep.
I don't want to be one of those guys. What do you mean? So you're going to go like, oh, here comes Steve again, knocking on the boss's
door.
Well,
I think there's really a fine line between being annoying and being somebody who says hi.
Let me know when I get there. Will you do that?
Well, I think when you see the manager come in, always stand up, always shake their hand, always be polite. When they walk away, you want them to say to somebody else, who was that girl? Who was that guy? You want to make a point of just standing out.
I think the point is to not be invisible.
Exactly right.
And to be present in the job. I mean, you talk about learning why they want some milk. Learn how they order the food.
Learn how they order. Remember that. And I'll tell you what. When people come in and buy something from you, whether if you're working retail during the holiday season, remember the people. You'd be surprised about what people take, and they'll say, well, what do? Are you new here? Well, no, I lost my job in April, and I needed some money for that. Really, what were you doing before? It can lead into other jobs, too. Great customer service. My dad told me when I was a kid, a handshake and a smile goes a lot farther than not having one.
There you go. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of the LaSalle Network. Thanks for coming by today.
Hey, thanks for having me, and happy holiday season to you.
The same back at you. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Kim Gordon, it is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Friday afternoon. Okay, it's the first Friday of December, which means the Labor Department was out with its jobless numbers for November, 178,000 jobs created, and the unemployment, the jobless rate drops to 4.6%, drops 0.3 of a point to 4.6%, the lowest, I believe, in 9 years or so. To help sort us out that out, Mark Hamrick will join us. He's the senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com and is on the program from time to time. Mark, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You tell me, but it seems to me like, and I want to discuss the reasons for it, but 0.3 of a point drop in the jobless rate is a pretty big drop.
It is. Diving beneath the surface, though, about 2/3 of that improvement, so to speak, was because people were no longer looking for work. The other third was because people were hired. So that's not an elegant way to get the unemployment rate lower. It's not entirely constructive. So what I look at in a report like this beyond that then is level of hiring. And roughly it was in line with the average for every month so far this year. The average itself, 180,000 jobs added. This was 178,000.
So if 2/3 of them are no longer looking, often people say, well, those are people who've given up on the job market. I don't know if people are giving up now. Are these baby boomers retiring, or what percentage of them are, you know, people who no longer need to work?
Well, it's all the above, and you're not going to be able to cure the quote-unquote problem of baby boomer retirements. You don't want to cure the quote-unquote problem of people who are high school students staying in school, and the same for college students. But what you would like to do is find solutions to people who are underemployed, that number continuing to decline, but it's still significant, and the number of long-term unemployed still significant. And we know the labor force participation, which we alluded to earlier, the percentage of people either working or looking for work is at a decade's low level. It's probably unreasonable to expect that you can boost that significantly, but whether you get better paying jobs, better quality jobs, more full-time jobs, those are some of the things we'd like to see. And indeed, helping the people who've been sidelined for way too long is the, to some degree, mandate, if not just the promise that needs to be kept by the incoming president.
The I read or hear about full employment and that we're reaching full employment. What exactly is that, and are we there?
Well, a full employment is a little like a recession. You know you're experiencing it after the fact.
Okay.
It's a little like a car accident. So full employment, though, would be a good thing. And we're probably not there yet because we know that there are a lot of people out there who haven't yet sort of attained that level they'd like to have. The question is, what level can you attain? And we don't really know, because there are probably some people who are either not sufficiently incentivized to work. There are some people who are not qualified to work, and there are some people who don't want to work. And we'll really only know the answer to that after we start to see the unemployment rate start to move substantially higher, which we hope isn't anytime soon.
Okay, so when we talk about the 4.6, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the U3 rate that we're talking about, correct?
Correct, yeah.
People like to look at the U6 rate, which I think maybe is what we've been discussing here a little bit. That unemployment rate is 9.3%, which is also down, so that's good.
Yeah, that's also at pre-recession levels. And, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, whether the news media, which basically includes all of us, focuses right. too often on the one that's 4.6. The bottom line is this data is all publicly available, and we should pay attention to all of it because people have been marginalized or left behind or unable to participate at the level they'd want to. I've also been thinking about the fact that the incoming president has said that essentially all this data is a lie, and he's going to be in the position of next nominating a labor secretary who's going to preside over these statistics, which are all lies. It's going to be interesting to see how we handle that once he's actually in office.
Well, I think it's probably going to be like a lot of things he said, that once he sort of sees the reality of it, he's going to realize that there's not much you can do. But as a guy in the media or some guy who's just trying to read it, I feel sometimes a little like Charlie Brown running up to kick the football and Lucy's holding it. Every time I think I understand and think this is a good report, the economists or Lucy or whoever pulls the ball away. These numbers are good numbers today, correct?
Well, let's try to back away from using adjectives for a moment, because I know while that is sort of the way that we'd like to go on this, the reality is that in a country of 300 million people or more, the data doesn't tell the story of each and every one of those people individually. Has the economy improved substantially from the recession and financial crisis? Absolutely. Is the economy totally healed from all that? Absolutely not. Is there going to be long-lasting repercussions for all that? Absolutely. Are there some individuals who will never be helped? Probably. So, you know, we could walk into, let's say, a shopping mall and look across, you know, the spectrum, and there's someone there who's working for minimum wage. There's someone there who's buying, you know, a $10,000 bracelet. And that data doesn't tell the individual stories of all those people. So, you know, we're all pressed to say, is it good, bad, or somewhere in between? And the story is that the job market is healing. The economy is in a space that it hasn't been in really for the last 8 years. So that's obviously very good. But there's more healing that probably needs to be done so that those people who haven't been able to participate might have a better hope of doing that.
I want to talk to you about the bank rate economic indicator, the survey of economists. And because one of the things they predicted in this most recent edition was an increase in wages next year, the rate wages, I think, dropped a little bit in this report. So Compare and contrast that for me.
Yeah, so, you know, within this report, and even for those of us that watch it closely, there's a lot of data out there. But within this report, there's a set called the average hourly earnings component. And in the previous month, in October, that we saw a month ago released, we saw a gain year over year of 2.8%. So, in other words, did your wages rise 2.8% over the past year? That one would hope so, if not better. But that's the piece that we got in that anyway. Today, it was up just 2.5% over the past year. So that was a bit of a setback, but still it's rising, and I would expect that that's a bit of an anomaly. We'll probably recapture some of the previous improvement going forward. Thanks for asking about the economic survey.
Yeah.
We just published that this week. We asked economists, as we do on a quarterly basis, all kinds of questions, and there were really two resounding answers they gave. And I would say on the good news front, all but one said that they do expect substantial wage improvement over the next year. So to the degree that that hasn't been part of the recovery so far, I think we can keep fingers crossed and hope that we do see that.
Let me introduce your negative side, right? So we've been expanding for 7 years. I think the third longest post-World War II expansion. If it would continue for 4 years, it would be the longest ever, which seems highly unlikely. So about half your economists think we might be headed toward a recession during the first administration of Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, economists are very good at sort of splitting the difference and finding the average, and that's what they did, I think, here. And, you know, as you just said very well, it's probably unreasonable to expect that, or at least to bet that the economy continues to expand for another 4 years. But there are also some things that I've been talking about that are sort of divided along the good Trump, bad Trump proposals. And the good Trump proposals, without getting into what they actually might be once we see the details, would be obviously infrastructure, building roads, bridges, and highways, mass transit, electrical grid, all of which need attention. Some degree of tax reform that helps individuals and business, especially to incentivize business to not only invest in structures and equipment and people, but also to do a broader brushstroke on the piece that has to do with trying to keep companies from leaving the United States or at least keeping their money abroad. And then finally, I would say, and this doesn't seem to be a priority of the incoming president, but immigration reform, not just sort of taking a criminal justice approach to it. So those are some priorities. On the bad Trump part of it, you know, you talk about, let's say, deporting millions of people.
Right.
That's one thing. The trade wars part, which scares the living daylights out of just about everybody. But again, as you said, some of the incoming cabinet secretaries are definitely walking back that part. So, you know, but those are the parts that have the potential for disrupting the economy in a very negative way. So I think the economists are still keeping some of those proposals in the back of their mind as they look at things that could cause an economic contraction, because these are things that have been talked about.
That's Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Thanks very much for joining us today, Mark. I always appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it very much, Steve. Thanks so much, and hope everybody has a great weekend.
Yep, same to you. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion. It's 12:53 here on the Business Lunch, and I don't know if this is a good idea. Chris Vail is in the studio from Logical Position. You know, and he helps businesses with their websites. Chris, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, great to be here, Steve.
And so the idea was you're going to come and give people some ideas of what they could do to improve their site and build their traffic, and you said you're going to do it through my website, SteveBertrandTravel.com.
That's right. So get ready. I did a little bit of research on your website.
Is this going to embarrass me at all?
Just a little bit, but okay. Not bad. What I want to do is kind of just point out some opportunities. If you own a website or you run a website, we're hosting an event next Thursday. We'll talk about it at the end. But what I want to do is kind of go through a couple steps to improve your website's rankings. So just to get everyone on the same page, why don't you tell me in 30 seconds what your website's all about? I'll turn it around on you.
So Steve Bertrand Travel is a company that creates tours of Europe for businesses or charities who want to raise money or build community for their business with their clientele.
Perfect. And that's what I got when I was going through the site. So you've got some great content that explains what you do, but there's some things that are missing. And so four steps to improve your website's ranking. The first thing I'm going to say is keyword research. What are people actually typing into Google when they're looking for what you have to offer? Pop quiz for you.
Yeah.
Do more people search travel fundraising or fundraising travel?
I would say travel fundraising.
Travel fundraising, 2-1, yeah.
Really?
So that's more popular.
And that's the sort of thing, if I know that, I can work my verbiage on my site and it pays off.
Exactly. So that's what keyword research helps with, is figuring out, first of all, what are people actually searching for when they're looking for your product? So the next step is on-site optimization. So now what do you do on your site to make sure that these search engines understand what you're going after?
Yeah, and I don't know what you're talking about.
There we go. So every page on your site has what's called a title. It's the most simple thing, the first thing search engines look for to figure out what's this page about. And on your site, your homepage, for example, just says Steve Bertrand Travel.
Okay.
The opportunity is to put a keyword in that title along with your brand.
Because no one is searching Steve Bertrand Travel.
Or if
they're searching travel fundraising or, right.
Right. If they do, they're going to find you. So the non-branded terms are really important to put in your titles.
Interesting.
So your homepage title should say, maybe for instance, travel fundraising / Steve Bertrand Travel. And that's a big opportunity to tell search engines what you're going after.
Okay, so when you say that, the page is that what people are reading, or that's what I'm naming them back to?
So your homepage is a page, the contact page.
But when I name them, that's what's on the page, what people are reading.
Actually, it's a back-end.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, okay. So the title is on the back-end of every site, telling the search engines, clarifying what's this page about.
Okay, yeah, okay. That makes sense to me.
So the title is the first thing, and the next thing is work through the content. And just like we said on that keyword research, you might want to use the word travel fundraising a couple times. The next thing after that is to develop a content strategy. So now you've got this homepage targeting travel fundraising, and now you want to go ahead and make the rest of your site verify that that's what you do.
And so one of the things you suggest then, which I don't do, and you know, guys running a hot dog stand might not do, is to create content and then have people share that content, right?
That's exactly.
So is this like, that's like a blog or something that you can get out on Facebook and people would pass around? And
blog, resources page, news, articles, anything that you can put up on your site that's going to kind of build value for your users is also going to help you with rankings.
Because when I think of that, it's sort of, you think of it as it's like, it's peripheral to the central business of selling hot dogs.
Yep.
But it does bring people around in another way.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you can get that content shared, not only are people going to come directly through people talking about, hey, look at this article I found on Steve Bertrand Travel, but they're also the search engine are also going to see that, and your rankings are going to go up. So you're going to get more traffic from Google searches that way.
So what I do is I write a little travel blog, put it on Facebook, have people share it around, and then there's a little more action.
So you get traffic coming in from a lot of different channels from one piece of content.
Okay, that didn't really hurt at all.
Yeah,
it was
wasn't too bad, right? Just opportunity.
I didn't know you were going to do that, but I'm glad. Yeah, I appreciate that you did. This is the sort of stuff that we've been talking about this event, and I got a commercial. I'm going to do it again in a minute, but next week, right, where people can get help like this.
Right. So on December 8th at Loyola University up here in Chicago, we're going to do a co-branded event with Google. We'll be talking about web development, SEO, and AdWords, and it's a limited seating. We're giving away free prizes. Everyone's going home with something. Plus, we'll have some big giveaways. And you can register at googleinchicago.com. That's googleinchicago.com.
Great. I'll read it in a couple of minutes so people can write it down. Hey, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.